And then so we have, hey Archit, come on in. There's still a chair here. You can introduce yourself before we get started here. I'm going to stop the recording here and we'll start again.
I took the deep learning class.
Okay, so Koyana is a third year PhD student in my lab. She is very interested in problems where you treat models sort of like data instead of just the data as data, right? So what happens if you have a lot of different models? She wrote a paper called Model Lakes, where she thinks about different problems that you might want to solve if you have this problem where you have tons and tons of different models. And so one of the issues that she's been chasing is what happens if you have pairs of models, like a fine-tuned model and a base model. But somebody doesn't do a good job at documenting what they did, then what can you learn about it? So this is the theme of her talk, or I don't know, I imagine this will be the theme of talk, or at least it'll be the theme of
the entire general spectrum of what I guess I do. But like, again, I feel like most research projects, depending on like what you get here and there, changes.
And so this is a very much work in progress talk where she's, so you know, where we, so we do a lot of like finished research talks in this seminar normally, but then for our own students, we're just encouraging people to just say, okay, here's my half done thing, give me some advice. So this is the talk that's sort of in that spirit. So everybody, thank you to Tonya and so.
Okay, well, yeah, so the title of my talk is Recovering Sensitive Fine-Tuning Data via Gradients. And so to kind of just start off with, of course, like an AI generated image, but like the idea is like, what we have this like sensitive data in like the wild, and like what do I kind of mean by that? Like we have on one side like the input prompt, where like you have the system prompt or like the user input that inputted prompt that may be used for like training, for like other future iterations of the model, or you just have the training data itself, and like part one of that is like the pre-trained data, and like another is like if you're continuing to fine-tune, then you have a specific like fine-tuned data. And you know, people have been concerned about like these leakage of like sensitive data, both in terms of like input prompts and then as well as like with respect to like training data. So there have been tons of works. But like, what if we don't really know what we're looking for? Like at this, most of the previous work has been like, okay, we care about like this category of data. We're going to try to like find ways to like prompt and like break it, or like try to like say something that we care about, sort of thing. But like, what if we don't even know what that sensitive data would look like? And so that's kind of generally the theme that I'm trying to like get into, like based on that. And so like, given a fine base and a fine-tuned model, can we recover sensitive data that the latter was trained on?
What do you mean by sensitive data?
So sensitive data could basically either be like personal identifying information, or like it could also kind of be okay, this is not like sensitive, but it's like persuasive data, where like, you know, let's say there was a model that was trained like, okay, at the end I want you to convince this person to buy this product, let's say. Then like it's written like, you know, it's trained to like kind of say that to you when it's not really like it, basically like biasing you to like do get into that. But for now, I think like I'm focusing on sensitive data because that's like more like viable to
but you have like broad categories of sensitive data.
Sure, yeah. So like, I mean, like sure, email IDs, security numbers and things like that, but essentially anything personally identifying. But again, like right now, so it's trying to go back to this thing of like, how, what do we like, what should we look for when we don't know, sort of thing. So like sensitive data can also be just as broad in terms of whatever you consider sensitive, but at this point, like I'm just considering anything that's like personal identifying as like sensitive. But this is still a very broad question, because like, how can we really know where to find that sensitive data? And so right now, what I'm trying to do is, given a base and like a gradient to like fine tune the model, can we actually recover sensitive data that was trained on that ladder model? So I'm trying to focus on gradients and like see what can we get out of that, because like that's like the one thing like while you're training that's like usually tend to, you know, have access to and like change. And to be more specific, let's see, did I have anything else to say in this particular one? Not yet, but yes, yeah, question, yeah.
Just creating the devil's idea. Yes. I mean, if you're assuming access to the gradient,
mm-hmm.
why wouldn't you have access to the data? With what? Yeah, in, yeah.
You see, this is the ultimate goal. This is the current goal. The idea was that like, if you can do through gradients, and if at some point you can do an approximation of gradients, or like, let's say some sort of difference between the two models, can you like kind of get like an approximate of what sensitive data might have been trained on? It's like, it's a very step-by-step okay. iteration of like a big goal in that sense.
I have a different question. Like,
yeah.
So the underlying assumption here is basically the gradients for the sensitive data is different from the rest. Is that correct?
Yes and no. Like the idea is I get, okay, we'll see that in the later in a bit, but like the idea is if I have the gradient, can I have a method that can somehow like sift out what could be like the sensitive aspect or like the non-sensitive cases? Because like, let's say like we are like, this building is Northeastern, and currently the people residing here are Rohit, Shashanta, and like
good.
And like Carson, and like, and yeah, and so the personal identifying information in these days are like your three names over here, but like let's say that entire sentence was there, can I actually get those instead, just those three names, without, because the other ones are like kind of like fluffy information. Yes.
So I'm going to ask the same question, but more concrete.
Yes.
Are you specifically interested in data that is memorized by the model, or any sensitive data that was in the training data? Perhaps maybe the model is not memorized it,
mm-hmm.
but you still want to somehow extract.
So this is a little bit in the fuzzy ground. Like at this point, we are seeing what the model has like learned. Now at this point, we don't know whether it's like learned or memorized. But like it's just an information that we can get.
Right. By yeah. that I mean the model can utter the names of me.
The gradient would have salient information of saying that. We do not know if the model will actually ultimately be able to say that.
Okay.
Yeah. And so yeah, that's the quote unquote current goal. And so kind of the main, like I feel like the infrastructure of my like methods and project is with this paper, which is the language modeling version paper. And, you know, just to kind of give like a brief understanding of what this is like the authors of this paper, they try to find a way where like if you have the next token probabilities of like whatever prompt like a user may have given, you don't have access to what this is, whether you can actually reconstruct what the prompt could have been. And so the way they did that is they basically trained like an inversion model. So it's essentially like a meta-learning approach where like they took in the next token probabilities and had trained like with a bunch of like ground truth prompts. And then ultimately this was like I guess like robust enough for that particular setting that they had to essentially reconstruct what the prompt was. So the difference now in what I'm trying to do is this, like now this, I should say fine tuning data just to be more specific, but like assuming that is hidden and you have your gradients, can we like also train a similar inversion model to essentially get back what the input, like the fine tuned data was? And so, and I see this is our first setup. So like, so what I'm trying to like see over here is hints, like without even knowing whether it's sensitive information or not, can I actually just reconstruct what the fine-tuned data could have been? And so just to like make it more concrete about the gradient itself, point, like these are like, if you want to take a closer look, you can, but the point of this is I'm just going one data point at a time and I'm taking essentially the rank one step gradient. So like, it's like the, like, I guess, how do I say, like the smallest like gradient sort of input you can get, and just trying to see like what you can get gather out of that. And so just to hold on this, any questions? Yes, okay.
There you go.
Yes.
So what do you envision that you will find different, or why gradients? Why not just the output?
Why not just the...
Like the inversion paper.
Yeah.
Does it from the output logic distribution.
Right.
But you want to do it with gradients. Do you see any advantage that you would get from gradients?
Right, because if you're like, if you're kind of doing step by step and like using gradients, you can maybe see at what point it actually like learned that sensitive data. And okay. See that, because like with the next token probabilities, you don't really know that in the sense of like whether, so like as this kind of goes back to the question of whether the model has learned or memorized or maybe not learned it at all, but like maybe the gradient could have that information regardless of what like the model kind of.
So can I say like you're trying to make sense of what a gradient is doing during a training step, like what the
essentially
model
is doing. That's like the, yeah, so that's the interpretability perspective. You can think of this as three perspectives. The interpretability perspective is like, one, like you have this gradient, what can you understand about this gradient with the difference of the two models and with respect to like the data it was like trained on. You can think of it from an attack perspective, because technically speaking, if you do have access to this as an attacker, you may want to see if you can access sensitive data. But you can also think of it as like from a government point of view, where like, hey, you know, I have these two models. I want to see whether it was actually trained on a sensitive data. And so there's perspective on that as well. But right now, since we are interpretability folks, starting off with the interpretability perspective, I guess. But yeah, you had also a question, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if I understand your work correctly, so what you're trying to do is basically you have access to a gradient per input, and you now want to decompose the gradient into sensitive and non-sensitive information. Is that
essentially, yeah.
So the decomposition part is like doing this SVB.
Not really. The decomposition part is just for me to like work with fewer dimensions, like just fewer data.
The SVD is not the trick yet, right?
Yeah.
What is this SVD for?
The SVD for is to just like reduce like the like and just have more sparsity in like what we want to see for the gradient and like look into it.
So you're collecting this U. Is it the U that you're collecting, I guess?
Yeah.
You know, the funny thing is I've never seen this code before, so this is really informative. Really, really helpful. So you're collecting this U. And is this U your plan is going to be to use this U as input to a model that you train later, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, this is like the red use rat thing. That's what we
I actually wanted to ask this question as well. We usually don't care about the U. We care about the direction, which is usually V.
Oh. So does your stuff work better if you train on V instead of U?
I can
see this is what happens when you show, you know,
yes.
Show Arnav the code.
Yes. That's why I have the slide, yes.
What does U signify then?
Yeah, U signifies the mixture between these directions. Mm-hmm. And V are the actual directions.
Yeah, you're right.
So like, okay, there's this like
the other thing is
we did this versus...
some in PyTorch, in some models things are transposed from the way that a linear algebra person might read it, I don't know which one this is.
Okay. Yeah, sometimes the weights are actually transposed. Yeah,
so like looking back at the past code, because it has been months, I did have there was a comment saying hacky way to get the smaller vector of the gradient. And and yes, that's what happened. And then like ultimately, yes, this particular low rank thing is to get the reduced gradient.
So, if you're interpreting the transformation as column spaces, then you care about the view.
Okay.
But if it is transposed, then you are actually doing it row spaces, then you care about the U.
Mm-hmm.
But so I think, V or the U. So there's three there's three results from this SVD,
right.
U, S, and V.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you might want to be training on the other one. We just don't,
We don't know.
We care about whatever the dimension of gradient is. If it's U or V, whatever that is, that's what you care about, right?
We care about the direction of the change, right? I thought that V is the one that gives you the directions.
Like it depends on what the G
dimension
is.
Yeah.
But you care about what the hidden dimension of the gradient actually is.
The dimension is always one here.
What do you mean always one?
The rank is always one here.
No, 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 the G, not the U.
G.
G is the input, the gradient.
The matrix.
Yeah. The matrix.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So G is probably, it has like the hidden dimension of the model itself.
Yeah.
Like 4096.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whatever U or V,
oh,
one of
G.
them would be 4096.
It's actually not the gradient of the model dimension. G is the gradient of the whole weight. Right, so it's a projection.
Yeah, it's a matrix.
It's a projection matrix.
It's a matrix of 4096.
Yeah, by 4096
yeah,
by whatever
the matrix
yeah, depends on the matrix
or
yeah.
rectangular matrix.
Yeah, depends on the matrix.
Yeah, so if it's like a fan in or fan out MLP or something like that, it could be like 4000 by 1000.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. That is right. Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. It's just I have not printed the values in so long. So like, yeah, it's just that. But yes. Mm-hmm.
Can I ask about the granularity of the gradients? Is it like per input always or per batch?
Per input.
Oh wait. Oh, for right now you're not batching inputs yet.
Yeah, the batch is one.
Batch
okay.
One.
Okay.
Like,
maybe later on in your paper you will do this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So the whole idea, the I guess the intention behind this is like if you are able to gather anything from this rank one, like, you know, representation, and like, you're still able to grab like some like data.
But
yes.
But I want to clarify. So, but you're doing this on an autoregressive language model,
yes.
right? And so even though you only have one,
mm-hmm.
it could be a long piece of text
yes.
with like lots of cross entropies added up. I mean, even like a single sentence is basically a batch of tokens, right?
Yes, that's why
yeah.
hint we can recover things.
But with the gradient wouldn't have all those batch dimensions, right? The gradient is just aggregated once and then it gives.
It adds
yeah.
it adds everything once, yeah. That's right.
Yes.
Actually, do you want to go? You've been waiting.
Yeah, I was just wondering for, you know, if we're thinking, let's say the column, we're thinking in terms of like column
you
vectors and we're looking at like some what rank one like modification, then we have like a one vector that will modify all of the column vectors with like different weights.
Yeah.
But if it's not like neuron basis aligned, like if it's just like, if it's all in superposition, then why do we care about the modification along like each, like why do we care about only one of the right singular vector? Why not?
Why not
why
both of
we...
them?
Yeah, yeah. Why not both of them?
Yeah, why not both of them?
Oh, okay. Oh,
yeah.
I think I got confused.
Oh, but it's just
yeah.
twice as big. So maybe you'd want to take both of them as inputs. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, that's okay.
Yes. Sure. Sure. Yes.
Yeah, so kind of related to how big it is, I'm curious, like, what's kind of the order of magnitude of, like, the base gradient, the, like, reduced gradient that you're trying to use? And then, like the probability vector that paper that inspired this uses.
Well, how big are all these different pieces of data?
Good question.
It's like power of 10 is fine.
So for context, the model that we're using in this one is like Pythia 14 million. So even amongst like models itself, is like one of the smaller ones. But I think the gradient. I can't recall the number, but it was still pretty big. But maybe I can get back to you offline.
The gradient, the size of the gradient would be equal to the size of the model, because like basically when you train a model, you get an update value, a gradient value for every single parameter in the model, right? So like you said, it's 14 million.
Yeah.
So that's 14 million numbers. So 14 mega, you know, 14 times 4 megabytes, right? You know, so 50 megabytes of data would be the full gradient. And then if you're doing this SVD, like what's the dimension of Pythia 14b? Like is it a 700 dimensional?
768, yes.
768 or something like that. So if
yes.
it's 700, so
mm-hmm.
so if you're doing a rank one reduction, that would basically divide by about 700.
Okay.
About, you know, so it's like, so you should.
It says 128.
768 is
70.
Oh, one, maybe 128, smaller. So it's still 100. So, right, so you're going from whatever it is, 50 megabytes down to 100 times less than that. So I guess, what is that? It's good to do this back of the envelope. What's 50 megabytes divided by 100?
500k.
Yeah. So she still has a 500k input. And then when you guys are like, hey, maybe we should do both U and V. Well, instead of 500k, maybe it's a megabyte. And she's like, oh, that's a lot. That's a lot, right? You know? Yeah, but maybe it's okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think I will.
And are you doing every layer, or are you picking out layers?
I'm picking layer 4.
Oh, so you're just doing one layer. So that's another reduction in like 20-fold or something like that.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
Yes.
You'll sweep, right? Ultimately.
Ultimately, yeah. Yes. Okay. Yes. 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 There's a lot of ultimately, but yes.
Why did you pick layer 4?
Because usually, like, the semantic content, like from the previous.
Is it the wrong results?
Yes. Exactly. Okay. So we're starting off with like that.
There's only 6 layers.
Yes.
Oh, there's only 6 layers in this model. Oh, so it's not a factor of 20.
Yeah.
Factor of 6.
So ideally, by that time, it should have like.
Got it.
Yeah. So we were trying to. In terms of
designing experiments, do you suggest taking the first layer, last layer, or something in the middle? Absolutely.
Oh, for this type of thing? Yeah, I think that Konya is on the right track, something in the middle. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, but again, it has to be a full sweep eventually for like more robustness. But yeah, okay, that is with this. Just any other. Yes.
I guess not to belabor the point too much, but another dimensional reduction could use. Have you considered like using a LoRa or LoRaic adaption fine tune instead of a full fine tune and then later try to adapt some dimensional reduction?
Oh, I haven't considered that, but yes, we could do that as well. Yeah. It's just, yeah, I think so. Yeah. Okay. You're answering all my questions that I had towards the end as well. So that's great. Cool. Okay. So in terms of the initial experiment setup, kind of went, again, since it was trying to recreate like the paper's setup, I used what they had. So that was like 1 million instructions, data set. The inverter model is a T5 model, a small model. And then the language model that we used was the 50 of 14 million. And yeah, just to give a little bit more context, it was like about 25 epochs on like 1 million training data, and like eval after almost every like 2 epochs. And so to kind of just give like a result of like the initial thing, this is not sensitive data. This at this point, the initial setup is just to see whether it can recover information, like whether it can recover data. And so yeah, these are like some instances where
I have another question before you show you the results.
Yes.
So because I wish I understood this better.
Yes.
So you have this is output from a fine-tuned T5 small. Is that right that you're fine-tuning?
The T5 small we're fine-tuning, yes.
Mm-hmm. And so normally the input to T5 small is like a bunch of text or a bunch of tokens.
Right.
So, but you've been saying that you have this input, which is your U. So how do you feed your U thing into T5 small? How is that fed in?
We have a embedder sort of thing to like ultimately change it to the dimension of 768.
I see.
And then we
make into a series of tokens.
Yes. And then like just run it. Yeah.
I see.
Yeah.
I see.
Uh-huh.
So make it into a series of tokens. I thought that you were just doing model stitching. Just an affine transformation from.
Sorry. Like the gradients that we have, we just essentially like shape it into the T5.
Into like one token input or a bunch of tokens?
One token, I think.
Really? Just one? Because that's only 768 numbers.
The last token of it. So I guess it's the entire thing. Sorry.
But you have, but you said that you have gradient for the whole sentence.
Yes.
And then you,
but then like
the gradients are accumulated now.
Yes.
She's taking the next token thing.
No. So your gradients are definitely over the weights.
Yes.
Right. So she's got like, you know, this loss taken over the entire sentence, and it turns into this giant, you know, 50 megabyte gradient.
So
it's over the weights, and then she reduces it down to
768 numbers.
Yes.
Is it only 768 numbers?
Yeah, it's one
because
record.
It's one layer, one. I see.
Yes.
So maybe that is all the way down to a single token for T5.
Yes.
Is it? Yeah. Could it be that small?
Like,
okay, so I don't even know. Okay,
that's what at least.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah.
I guess you're right. You know, I don't know. Like, you could, like, T5 is used to, like, pretty discretized results. And so I imagine that if you just feed the vector in to T5, it might not be accustomed to, you know, thinking so hard about a single token. Like, I can kind of imagine breaking it up into, I don't know, 64-dimensional pieces or something like that. And then, like, say, okay, this first 64 dimensions will give you this token, and the second 64 dimensions will give you the next token. And just, like, spreading it out so that T5 has more space to, you know, specialize and think about what all the different parts of the vector are.
What did the previous work do? It's just the last token.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they just take
10,000 numbers.
10,000.
Yeah, how did they feed this into T5? Don't remember. I had to go back and look.
Yes.
Right, yes.
Yes.
It's okay. These are all good questions to really.
These are good questions. Well. Yes.
Another thing is that T5 is a model that is encoder decoder model trained with masked language modeling objective.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So when you are actually fine tuning the model, how are you feeding it? And second, how are you fine-tuning the model? Is it still the mask language modeling objective, or is it now an extra prediction objective?
For which one?
It's still the mask prediction objective.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is supposed to generate autoregressively?
Yes.
You're training the autoregressive part of T5, right?
Yes.
Just the decoder part?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And why can the inversion model be the same as the original model?
Why can the inversion model be the same as the original model?
Just... Well, why cannot? You mean?
Yeah.
Well, why not just use the same model?
Yeah.
Well.
That I mean, intuitively, that makes more sense to me.
Right? I think the idea initially was to continue with the setup just to, like, kind of see the transferability of, like, what the findings could be. And then, because ideally speaking, it would be nice to have this generic inverter model
because gradients. If you use that setup, you're actually improving the model using its own output.
Like, there's an elegance there.
Yeah.
True.
But your model is very, very underpowered. It's this 14 million parameter model. Right. So
it'd go big, like 70M or like 410M.
Yeah, but then you make the problem harder too at the same time, right? It allows you to scale these things.
If I were to start with it, I would start with like 12 billion.
But I think it's a reasonable question. But but your strategy allows you to make use a more powerful model to understand an easier one.
And this is like model probabilities for the next token. So they just get it for the next token, at least from that information over there. Gives a probability of each of the possible next tokens. So, let's see. Size of the it just seems like all its like next token probabilities.
Right, and how do they feed that into T5?
They use a single logic vector.
Oh, they just feed it directly in as one token.
One token.
Mm-hmm.
So they transform that 50,000 vector to some 7 with an embedder which they train themselves.
Yeah, they're training T5, so they're also training
the embedder
of that. So,
So you're doing the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, like, the one good thing about their code base is just generally kind of
works.
Like you just need to add a new class, find it for the gradients itself, and then run it on it.
Can you scroll up to that equation you just went past?
Yes.
It looks like they're... Oh, wait. Do you know what they're doing with the argmax x there?
Isn't that just the predicted next inversion?
Yeah.
Or...
Because that's like the output, like they...
Because the decode. V is the like predicted probabilities that we've been talking about, I think.
Right.
And then C is just like a transformation of that. and then it's decoding C and then this X value. I'm just curious what that X value is.
The
next token prediction.
I believe it's the next. Yeah, it's just the next token probability, at least from this X over here.
Are you sure?
So T5 is a mass model, right?
Hmm.
So it predicts a mass, whatever the mass should predict. So they're using like first 10 tokens and masking the 11th token.
Yep.
Letting T5 predict the probabilities and just greedily sampling the top probability as the next token. They append it. It's like using T5 as an autoregressive.
So is X the 10 tokens that you're conditioning on? Or
no, X is the...
I mean, X is the text, right? And you're just taking the one that maximizes essentially whatever your decoder probability is. You're just taking the text of all possible texts that is most probable according to your decoder.
Yeah, that makes sense. You're just generating the text autoregressively and appending each token at a time. Yeah, basically greedy decoding.
What is saying? So wait, X is the input or the output to T5?
Output.
X star?
X star is the complete, it's the complete text. Or like the entire syntax.
It's an expert prediction, because it generates one by one. In the text, that is the predicted inversion.
Yeah, so I would assume like the first token which is predicted is like the, and that the is also being fed into the decoder model, and then the model generates some other token.
Star is the predicted output, right? So, all good?
No, hold on.
Yes, sorry.
Wait, unroll the vector into a sequence of pseudo embedding CI. Oh, what's that? Okay.
It was just constantly bouncing. So
sorry.
No, it's okay.
So we can conditionalize one output set. Full part of the vector B. Do you understand?
Yeah.
What is your reading faster?
The output logic distribution is like a very huge number of vectors. V vocabulary size.
Yeah.
Instead of using an embedding vector to reduce it, they are breaking it into multiple chunks.
Okay.
And using them as like tokens, like just what you.
Like kind of what I was describing, right?
Yeah. And then that is fed as an encoding input to the T5.
Right.
That's what they call unrolling.
I see. So X star is unrolled.
X star.
Is that right?
No, so I don't understand the X star part. I understand the CI part. So that is just them chunking the big vocabulary output into multiple tokens and then pushing it into the encoder of T5. I don't know how decoder of T5 works, if anybody else.
Yeah, I think X is like an empty thing. Let's assume that as an empty set in the start. So in the first time step, you give that encode C as the input to the encoder, and X is null, and basically empty set, and the model gives you the first token.
So this is the autoregressive decoder.
This is autoregressive. Oh, okay.
So you have to iterate the second thing just to get the generation out of it?
Yeah.
I see. So there's the encoder of T5 and the decoder of T5. And I see. All right. I see.
But what's up with that sectioning or categorizing of the probability?
Splitting up B into many things. This
intuition for that?
So that first line of the equation, they have this big V, which is for them, it's the logit vector or something, the probability vector V. And then they're saying, hey, that vector is so huge and it has so much information that we don't want to feed it in as a single token. They say that we're going to split it up into lots of tokens. The number of tokens is I going from one to line D divided by D at the right. So see, yeah. Right. So this thing, yeah, that, so that's the number of tokens that they're going to use, like size of vocabulary divided by D,
which is 42.
Right. And then, so they're going to use 42 tokens.
What's my theory?
And that's reading.
I'm shocked.
you're just used to Eric being the mathematical genius in the group, exactly. And it's just actually he's just reading. So but then you see on the to the left of the all, it says log V sub D, all these subscripts, right? So D parentheses I minus one colon DI, right? That business there, right? So they're just inventing this notation of V sub I being the probability of the I word. And they're saying, hey, Python style, D parentheses I minus one colon DI will indicate something like the 0 to 100th dimension, or the 101 to 200th dimension, or whatever. And so they have I of these little chunks of subsets of the probability vector. So they take the whole long probability vector and they just literally just chop it into subsegments. And then they log them for whatever reason. And then they stick them through some MLP, which maybe is like a trained thing that they're going to turn that into some other vector, right? Through some learned embedding. And then they get out this, pseudo embedding CI, which is D-dimensional, which
you can then feed into.
Then you can feed into TI as the ith token, out of 42 tokens. So they have these 42 tokens, and then so you have these 42 tokens, and then they'll be like the fixed conditioning text that T5 is expecting to see. And then T5 can then also just do this generative process where, given a fixed conditioning text, it can like write out a sentence autoregressively about it. And the second equation is that process. It's just saying, all right, starting from an empty string X, which they don't write down, how do you know what next thing to say in your generation? Well, you just keep this conditioning constant, this encoding of the 42 word C, and then you just keep on getting X to be longer by predicting the next X token.
Well, I have two questions.
Yes.
The first is, why do that chunking is still not clear to me? Why not just use the entire thing? Is it for the computational reason or something else?
They say that there are reductions rank.
There is what?
Large reduction
in the rank.
And loss of information.
They say if you try to put it all in one token, then you lose too much information.
Oh, I see.
Right. So there's another variable that you could play with, because I don't know how many tokens you're using it, but like you could potentially spread out to more tokens. If, right. And so there's another hyperparameter.
I don't understand their choice of D. I mean, like, why would you choose D equals to the model size? It seems like they're... The first model is like PTS-70, I'm assuming. In that case, D is like...
I think in this case, it's
T5. T5C.
But that particular number seems to be the model size of whatever the first model is.
No, it's the second, second model. T5.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Is that the reason or there's something else?
Yeah. But I also feel like you're right. It's arbitrary, right? They can set D to whatever, right? It's just like how much they want to spread it out to multiple tokens. So it's another thing for you to play with your training process.
It needs to be the model size, right? How do you fit it in otherwise? It needs to be the model size.
I mean, it's a vocabulary, so it's a whole 32,000. No,
but you need to fit it into the encoder latent ultimately.
Output has to be 160.
Yeah. Technically, the output of the MLP could be different from D, right? Yeah. Like it could be mapping.
I think then
it could be a fan out. It could be a fan in, right?
Then you need to train another thing.
But that MLP sub I is the thing. That's the train.
That's the thing.
Yeah, in fact, it looks like they don't just train one, they train I of them. So
42.
It's 40, they train 42 of these allocations.
Not 42. But I'm sorry, yeah, 42.
But D needs to be the model size.
Yeah, because the dimension. The model, if the downstream model is expecting a 768 dimensional input, then you need to give it one, even if behind the scenes you're taking multiple steps to get it to that
if
size.
If you said D21, you're like, you're feeding all the things in your vocabulary. That's
oh, so yeah, the model output.
Yeah, this is the output. Of the model.
So essentially, they're just training square MLPs.
Yes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
This is from Sasha Rush's group. What hackers? They're just hacking the thing. Right. So you know, it does like they take the wrong data type, and they're just like turning it into a bunch of tokens, and they're like, how do we do this? All is just split up into 42 tokens, and then it's not going to be the wrong thing. We'll just learn some MLPs, and they'll do it, right? And then you're using this setup analyzing a gradient instead of the probabilities.
Yeah.
And so now let's go back to your results.
Yes, but before that, I think Carson, you raised.
Oh, I was just wondering if they had like in the appendix like tests of different numbers of like instead of 42, like half of that, double that.
Yeah.
But maybe they just chose
they
it for 768.
Different. So they
didn't test it. I'm sure they didn't test it.
Yeah.
Carson, you have very high expectations for these PhD students. I think that I'm sure that they didn't.
We tried it for other data sets. That's what the appendix is on. Like how it's more analysis on the data set aspect. Yes. All right.
And just to clarify, your setup is instead of that 42 tokens is one token.
It ends up being 40. Yeah.
I have to check your code to see what it turns into. Yeah.
It's probably I think still gonna like because I didn't change anything off that other code. And so like literally is the input just being
it might just be one token because your vector is a lot
it's
smaller.
It's just like
right.
Right.
And so
though.
But it's something that you might want
to
adjust.
There's two adjusters.
Okay.
Yeah. Good questions. And it's also bringing me clarity. And so yes, in terms of performance, this is kind of like
let's look at the example.
Yes.
So this is so this is your data on processing gradients this way.
Yes. And so like it gets like the initial stuff like in terms of like describe the current shipping process used by Amazon. If that's the original one, the decoded one is describe the process for applying for a job, sort of thing. And like I think the general like instruction S. seems to be like instruction template seems to match up.
Is this restaurant review positive? Final great experience review. We had a
So
title
like,
great
title.
Review. I had a great experience with IC. So there's
it's kind of feeling like they're like completely inverting the semantics. To some extent.
Yes.
There's something in there.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm like absolutely opposite. Like we won the game. We lost the game. What is happening?
Yeah.
This is interesting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And I also continue to run it on again, since it was like a reproduction replication, I tried on the other data sets that they had. And in terms of performance, it does it's not a surprise, it does relatively well for the 1 million instructions ones, but then the ones that you see are super low are basically almost everything else except for the Python code Alpaca. And essentially the reason why it is like that is that it was trained on 1 million instructions. So it's more likely to give back similar instruction style prompts and everything else. It was just really bad at actually recovering.
So
the problem. Yes.
The red thing is what it was trained on or which data
it
was?
The red thing is what it was trained on. The V thing is the purple thing is the val.
And then higher is better?
Yes, higher is better. Because this is more similar to the reconstructed one.
That
makes
sense.
The original one.
That makes sense. So it's trained on red,
mm-hmm.
and which is similar to purple.
Yeah.
That's the holdout. And then there's the yellow thing that's pretty good.
Yes. So that's like Python called Alpaca, which is also very much instruction.
Oh, Alpaca is a training set.
Yeah.
As instruction training.
Like everything else over here, like AG news, summation, summarization, doc, that's kind of in the lower.
I see. It's not instruction-ish kind of text.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yes.
Is cosine similarity how the paper that inspired this evaluated?
So actually, that's how I think. Okay. This one, I think, like, they did it by F1 score and, like, I guess, like, root score and all, like, yeah, basically by root score. I did it by cosine similarity just because I thought that would be, like, better to just see, like, contextually. To
this cosine similarity of some representation vector? Which
Yeah, it was basically of the of just the decoded outputs that was given, and, like, I ran it on, like, like a sentence transformer to, like, then get the embeddings do, like, a cosine similarity. Yeah.
Okay.
So that was this one.
So this is a base model you are training on top of your fine-tuning data set, right?
This is a base model.
Like, with your 14 as a base
model. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So for an instruction tuning,
yeah,
the first few tokens are all obviously going to be, like, the most lossy tokens.
Yes.
As they go, probably the loss would go down.
Yes.
Is that, do you think that could be the reason why you're seeing this?
Yeah.
The first few sentences are, like, well represented, but then as it goes, it just drops down.
So there was actually no, like, in general, like, in terms of token size, I would say that could be the case, like, that is the case. And, like, instruction, like, style wise, it was more likely to get it. But, like, you know, there are cases where it still got the entire thing, or, like, even when it was instruction esque, it still butchered the entire thing. I have, like, qualitative instances for that. So, speaking of that, in terms of, like, I just, like, got, like, best instances. And so, yeah, like, it was able to, like, you know, get this, like, ditto sort of thing. And, like, just, like, token original and decoded-wise, it's, like, you know, the same. And in terms of, like, worst examples, yes, it's, like, yeah.
Okay, so the longer sentences are the worst examples.
Yes, they're generally worse.
What is the distribution of similarity like? Is it mostly tail-heavy or, like...
So I do have a graph for that. So this is like, do you ask for token lengths?
No. Like the cosine similarity distribution.
Yes.
I mean, is it mostly on the better side or the worse side? That's what I'm saying.
On, like, how many instances? On my test set, yeah. I guess, like, if I have to consider all the other data sets, probably on the worse side. Yeah, but on the instruction ones is on the much better side. Like if you look at the graph over here, like, it's probably, like, it's generally, like,
I see that they are
0.5. Yeah.
But you're mostly concerned with.
If you look at the graph, it looks like mostly on the positive side, though, right?
Wait one second.
I mean, if the
this is kind of, it's not his graph, but it's kind of.
Yeah.
If you look at the line chart you were showing, it looks.
Okay, I had two different line charts because I kind of skipped and was gonna show extra. Okay. Results, but getting out.
You have this for cosine, so you have blue score here. You have this kind of scatter plot for cosine.
Yes, I did.
That's this question, okay.
Yes, one second. Hold up. Well.
Oh yes.
Well, but huh. Yeah, it's just a blob.
Is the x range from -1 to 1? I can't read it.
0 to 1.
And was this? Oh, no. Do you know if this was for instruction text or for other types of text?
Instruction text.
Well, because, like, what is this? So this is 2. Like, this, what's that other one? That looks a little.
That one's 7,000 one was, like, literally everything, like 1,000 of each of the data set.
There including was, like, the not instruction text.
Yes.
And so this one down here is just instruction text.
Yes.
Only.
Yes. This one is just instruction.
I see. Okay.
Yes. Yes.
All right.
I have a bit of a novice question.
Yes.
So, like, cosine similarity versus, like, I don't know, like Euclidean or, like, L2 distance between, like, representations, this
right.
kind of thing. Like, do you ever use, like, L2? Is it always cosine similarity?
Well, I think so. I probably just was focusing on, like, semantics. So, like, juice for is
I have a math professor answer for you. Just they're the same. So, you know, in high dimensions, if you write down the formula for cosine or dot product, you're it basically discards one dimension of information from like the L2 distance, the Euclidean distance, and they're basically, you know, the same, like sort of two, you know, one minus the cosine or something, it's the same thing as the distance. Okay. And so or maybe the square root of it or something like that, right? So so yeah, not that much different.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
And what's the cosine similarity? What are the two things you're measuring?
So the original output and the decoded output, like I said, no, literally the output, the literally text to text.
You have like run it through BERT or something to get a sentence embedded.
And like, yeah.
So one thing I wanted to say is that it mostly looks on the positive side because cosine similarity is from minus one to one, and you are chopping from zero to minus one. So it seems like shifted to positive side.
At least
it's not reversing. Well, okay.
Well, it's all relative when it comes to this. For me, I like to look at this and think more. It's like still
okay. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, of course, like on the instruction side, it's definitely positive. But like just generally, like out of domain, it's like not that great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's how about that? That is like the positive and negative answer for that. And so this is still the initial setup, as you could also probably see from like my other, like, you know, a skip slide sort of thing. So yeah, basically from this is like the general stuff is like, okay, it can sort of be used to recover training data, but can we specifically get sensitive data? Now, how does that really work for us? So case study is, I call it like the person finder sort of like, yeah, case study, because, you know, rather than collecting email IDs, social security numbers and everything, one thing that is like, I guess, more like, I guess, easy to get would be like person names. And so, yeah, that for that, I needed to, this, I spent a good chunk of time trying to create a good person finder data set. And so, you know, when it comes to person names, like you could technically use, these existing like name entity extraction methods, but if upon like analysis and things like that, they don't actually perform that well. And so, I essentially had to do this whole like LLM looping to like essentially have a more positive thing, positive like person finder automated process. So,
like for creating a clean training set.
For creating a clean training set. And so like the first part of the thing is like, well, is there partial name present? And so the reason I look for is there partial name present is because I want to reduce the possibility like of like the model thinking that, hey, this could be a name, this could not be a name. I want it to be like specifically like, hey, this is really a name. Like,
to set context here. So you're describing your prompt engineering process for creating like, is it GPT-4 prompts or is it?
No. I used Llama 3.1.
Oh, the open model. So you're using the open LLM
very open
to help you help you filter your data set.
Yes.
Got it.
What data set?
To create a person finder data set. Because right now
we're using some text to create to find the
person. Yes. So I'm using the Dolma data set. I was initially working with Pile, but then apparently because of some copyright potential issues, just switched to Dolma because it's like
what Llama mod are you using?
Llama 3.18. Be instruct.
It's not good.
It's not good.
You should at least go to 70B to get like a better thing. But I'd actually suggest using GPT-4. I mean, in my experience, 8B is trash.
Oh, well, worked out with like these multiple chained ones.
After suffering through several weeks of getting this to clean your data, she's going to find a way.
Yes, it's all right. And so, yes, and then I guess that's why I needed like three prompts for it, right? So first is like seeing if there was partial name present. Second, extracting all the names. Now, he was right in that sense, like sometimes it's like doesn't like really like it repeats the names or things like that, so or like sometimes it doesn't really give a name. Oh, so I have like another thing, another time verify the name. I go through each name and be like, hey, is this really a name? And so that's why I have like this three chained process of like both verifications before and after and then in between to just get the names. Yes.
Sorry, so why didn't you just use like a data set that was made for named entity recognition?
Well, I didn't really find anything
really
like that was like good in the sense of like, yeah.
I think there are like some. PII data sets.
But okay. Let's see. Well,
maybe at your granularity, like partial name versus full name might not exist.
Yeah. And so I think we were looking for a very specific kind of how we should have our data set like and make it more generic. So I think that's why we went with that. Because there was, because the other ones, again, like, so, okay, we also wanted situations where there was no names. Because, like, you know, like, ultimately, the goal is, like, if you have given multiple data points and, like, there are some certain sentences which there are no names, you don't want it to return, like, a false sensitive data and things like that. So,
Kayana's situation here is a little different also, right? Because she's, you know, I think that what we're looking for is very, very clean training data as opposed to, like, a challenge evaluation set. Yeah. And then she could use some of these other data sets to evaluate and stuff later. But I think that some of the idea here is that like we wanted to have her in a situation where she has some training set where she really knows exactly where every single name is in the entire data set. So that if she needs to do things like synthetically expand the data set by putting in fake names or things like that, that she has like total control over everything instead of having like most of these other organic data sets are designed for, you know, challenge like realism. But then there's lots of ambiguous cases where it's like, is this really like, you know, this album is by Prince, right? Is Prince like a name or is that not a name? Is like a single word? Is that, you know, should you count that as a name? Is this personally identifiable? Is that like, do we care about Prince and Madonna and Sting, or not? And you know, sort of, there's all these cases, and you can kind of, and then Koyana sort of has this luxury now. She can be like, that's not part of my training data. I'm not considering that.
Although, you know, I do have famous names in the.
There are some famous names in there, right? But they're pretty unambiguous famous.
That's
names,
true.
Right?
Yeah.
Question.
Yes.
So did you try just to generate this text rather than filtering out?
They
might have given you cleaner data.
Fair.
It's fine if you didn't do that.
It might have been lovely.
No, yeah.
You can get diverse.
Yeah, sure. No, we wanted to get like a lot more diverse data as well. Cause like by using Dolma, like we got a lot of things in like caption, like image, like when you have like an HTML image text or something like that, you have a captioned name in that. To get or like you have like I guess normal like URLs or like Twitter or like I guess you can get those and like normal text as well. So like to just kind of get like diversity of like diverse.
Also a good motivation is if you have a real world fine-tuning data set and you're trying to actually train your model, having this type of identifying the personal information is more like you doing this in wild, like while fine-tuning is happening, what can I do, rather than if you create your own data set, it'll probably be more PII specific. And that's almost like I could as a reviewer say, oh, it's cheating, you got it. Heavily training on PII, obviously you'll find PII information in it.
Okay.
And so, yeah, data stat wise, like I do have this, I guess, it's in private, but like I can show you how it is, just in terms of like distribution. You notice that in general, like in the wild, like in Dolma data set, there's a lot more negatives, like you don't have a lot of I wouldn't say you don't have a lot, but there are more negative rows where you don't have names as compared to positive, but I collected about like 196,000 positive names. And like I wouldn't say names, I would say rows, because like each row could have like multiple names. And so like, I guess the most, like, I guess if I look at the bin and like look at the max, I would say two names, but like there's a good, like, yeah, there is like, you can get up to like, I guess there's one instance up to 24 names, but like generally you can get like, a good chunk of different names out there. And so, yeah, that's the data set and training setup. Now, I talked about having the idea of like, when there's no names, to actually not give any names and things like that. So I've just like for now added like 10% of negative instances in the data set, and the setup is the same as before, except like instead of reconstructing the input, I just change the labels, like training thing to be the name to get names instead. And so,
and if there's no names, I'll put nothing.
It'll be, yeah. And so, yeah, and like it's still converging down, and that's where like the hyperparameters of like just maybe increasing the learning rate, trying out these other things that we just talked about would be helpful. But
so there's training right now.
Yes.
As we speak.
Yes. But with like with the particular checkpoint where I felt like, oh, it's getting names and things like that. So yeah, like out of these 1,000 like validation rows, there are like 3,580 names. Out of that, like I guess it was completely recovered. So when I say chat fine-tuned, I mean like, so I actually stopped like, so for the initial setup, the fine-tuned model that I had, like with that instruction setting, I like stopped at a particular checkpoint and then used that and just continued to generate like fine-tune for like the getting like names instead. So just to double confirm, like not double confirm, to double clarify, I reused the inverter model that I previously trained to further train fine-tune on like this particular setting. Because at that time it was already good at recovering props, so I was just trying to get it for this. That's why, like, you know, I guess a good thing is from the previous chat fine-tune to like the current model is able to recover more number of names. And then partial names as well, it is able to recover a bunch. And I will show some instances, like it is able to, let's say, get the first name of like this two-part name or something like that. And or like sometimes semantically, like, so that's one thing that I was gonna try to show next, but I can like show instances. And oh my god, this actually looks much smaller than I hoped. But okay, let me try to highlight. So what was I trying to highlight here? So in this particular case, you got like Elon Musk and Alex Roy.
So that's the ground truth.
That's the ground truth. And so over here, it's able to get Elon Musk and Daniel Day-Lewis.
Who's Alex Roy?
The drive's own Alex Roy. I don't know.
It's somebody like the driver, like a TV person.
Yes, for some sort of person. And like in this particular instance, what I'm trying to show here is like this person is an Indian actress. Bhagyashri Pathwardhan, and like the decoded one are like Anushka Sharma, Anil Kapoor, basically it's all other Indian, like Indian actors. So it's kind of in like this kind of semantic space where like if it's not able to recover the right names, but it's still in the space of like getting like all these different actors and like Bollywood actors. So I thought it was very interesting to see. And then yeah, this is like another instance where like over here, the ground truth is just Ted Cruz, but over here, it's able to get it thinking of Ted Cruz and Joe Biden. And so, again, like thinking of like, yeah, thinking about it in terms of like, again, semantic space.
So, mm-hmm. In like that top row, the yes. Kind of orangish text, that's yes. Your like,
that input, is like the
original. Text.
That this is still the original text. It's just like the reason it's orange is just because I like was trying to highlight it and like okay. Show it up there. Yeah.
So, like, the original text has the name Daniel Zarilla, I guess?
Daniel Zarilla.
On that, like, end of the second line? Shouldn't that be in your ground truth?
Oh, yeah, how come it's not in the ground truth?
Daniel Zarilla, which, where do you...
Daniel Zarilla along with Drive's own Alex
Roy. Yeah, Daniel Zarilla along with Alex Roy. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a flaw. Yeah. It's a flaw in your training data.
Okay, that was 90. It was 95. Wait. It was 95%.
The GPT-4.
I did not get the stats of, like okay.
It sometimes makes mistakes,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it was 90, like when I sampled it on like 100 and like manually ground truth and stuff like that, it was 97%. 95 or 97%.
Missed a few percent still.
Yes, still missed a few percent.
But maybe GPT-4 would be able to get that for 99.
Is worth the amount of money spent is worth the thing.
It's worth it?
It's absolutely worth it.
Great.
It's not that big though. I mean, given the setup, it's like it's not going to be it's going to be highest like $20 or $30 at least.
Nice.
Yeah, which means like less than the cost of your labor for sure, right?
Yeah.
$20 or $30.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I would get an API key and pass it through.
Yes. Sounds good.
Hi, Quentin, how do you analyze your results?
How did I analyze my results? Like, right at this point, like, this is kind of just like it in the sense of like.
Oh, no, no. Yes. I meant like, how do you see your results? Do you see that as a win or like, do you
is it, oh, how is do it I good see? Or bad? Oh, well, I do. I will say it as it's in a win area just because, like.
Especially now that we see this Daniel thing actually shows up. That's like way better. Now we got to look at that.
Yes.
Pretty good.
Yes. And so, I think for me, I was just more like interested to now know the fact that it's kind of able to get into the same space of like I've noticed this in most like cases where even the partial names is like it either yeah it gets partial parts of the name or if it doesn't get the name it seems to usually be in like some semantic context, and so I thought it's pretty interesting that it's narrowing down to that.
So the model might probably know most of these actor names.
Yes, so the next step was to kind of reduce this and not have famous names and like kind of switch it up with like some like, so we were gonna now change it up where like maybe only top like the top 1% of the frequency of that data set we take it off and then just replace it with like synthetic,
right? So I think that's why that the entire Indian movie actor name,
yes, is able to come in.
It's pretty interesting because the gradient doesn't really care about the identifier anymore because it knows what it is. So it's just like muttering what the model is thinking of at this point. It's pretty interesting.
Yes.
And one more thing. So I think the numbers that you were showing was like this is the number of times the model has able to recover the thing, recover the names, right?
Right. Like full names, like just exactly how it is. That I have a separate one for partial names.
Why doesn't the number add up? Like
for what?
Like you have the total number of names is like 3,518.
Mm-hmm.
Like so 366 and 3214. Is actually 3580. So you're not considering partial name recovery as part of like any sort of name recovery.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Maybe using F1's Courier.
It adds.
Yeah.
It adds in the first.
Yeah. Well, but the next steps, well, was definitely like more data. Different hyperparameters, which we discussed with the UV and then the 42 chunk thing. I now have it in my head. In terms of trying to create like more difficult settings, which is like multiple gradient steps and like maybe increase like the number of like data points. But again, like this is definitely like a long, how do I say? A longitudinal study in some aspect, because right now we're using gradients, but ultimately I think I do want to get closer to the weight difference. So if you guys have any ideas on like how to reach closer to that, great. And yeah, any other thoughts, which I think we talked a little bit about confounding, any other experiments would you like me to set up and anything else to just kind of make you be more convinced that this is possible or maybe not? Yes.
Can you clarify what you mean by weight difference versus gradient?
So weight difference, I literally mean like parameter to parameter. If I just take the minus off it and like do it, because the gradient.
Two parameters are you?
So like, let's say, MLP.
No, but which, what? Like, which parameters of what minus what parameters?
Oh,
what?
Like the base and the fine tuned model.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Because. Like it's not exactly equal to gradient because gradient gets compounded, and so.
But to give context, right? So remember, so Kleina is like, you know, motivation is a little bit of the Hugging Face scenario, where you've got this llama that was published by Meta, and then hundreds of people are like uploading their fine tunes of llama. Oh, I've got my super mega awesome fine tune. Yeah, you should use this. Look at all the performance benefits it has. But then they don't explain like what they trained into it. And so Kanyana is very motivated by this question. It's like, what the heck is that thing? Right? Did you put something bad in it? Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe a different approach to answering what you want to achieve is first try to localize where your PIRs are encoded. Let's say the names or the SSN, those kind of information. And see if, I would assume that if you are able to localize it to some layers or some MLP things, I would assume that those MLPs would generally be
shared across the fine-tuned variance. It feels to me it's unlikely that if the base model has the PI information stored in the third layer, the fine-tuned model will have the PI information stored in, let's say, the sixth layer or the tenth layer.
Mm.
So if you are able to localize the PI information in your base model,
mm-hmm.
That reduces the space of the search that you need to do to a large extent. You find out that these are the MLPs which this one or two or three MLPs are encoding your names.
Mm-hmm.
So you take the difference of that and start from there. I feel that that seems like a more tractable problem to me. To see.
Huh? Now you're assuming that your fine tuning will also organize things in a nicely localized way.
I'm only concerned about the person.
I hope that it does. It's also very important for my project.
Well, so fine tuning might do different
things. But not assuming that. It could be anywhere.
Yeah.
Right. And it's, which is nice. It's a different approach.
So also, yeah. Just for context for the other visitors, this kind of started off as a spin-off to my initial, I guess, project, which I used to call the Rome Detector, where, like, if you had one model that was Rome edited, and then you had, like, this Rome edited model, can I actually recover the exact fact that was used to change it? And in that particular setup, I kind of used the models themselves to figure it out in terms of what I can get. But one, like, while I could see hints of it, it was noisy, like, how, like there would be other options that would also change. And so, like, what, how exactly, as, you know, as someone who doesn't really know the truth, what is the actual truth? And then we ran some experiments to know that, okay, let's assume we know what the subject is or the object is and the relation is. We noticed that even the best method within the model itself was not that great in terms of recovery. I think it was about 60%. And so that's why we then decided to do a meta-learning approach, which is how this entire project then started. So a bit of backstory.
Yeah. So she started off with your idea, Nikhil.
That seems more tractable to me.
But she found it not to be tractable.
I mean, maybe with the meta-learning one now, maybe it might end up being them. I don't know.
That's right. Yes. So maybe the... So just like the rest of the machine learning world, maybe the AI can figure it out for us.
Okay.
I believe you.
Well, you believe it? You think it'll figure it out?
Yeah.
But okay. Neuroscientists can't believe that. Please don't believe it.
I'm in the intersection of both worlds. So
similar to that, like instead of training on fine-tuning gradients, you could train on Rome updates.
Right.
And like the target would be the fact recovery, right?
Right. That's true. It can be. It's just this was more broader scope. So we were like, if you're doing this, might as well just try it.
Might as well just do it, yeah.
Can I say one problem with that?
Mm-hmm.
To get the Rome update, you need access to the base model so that you first need to take the difference. Then you have the update. And then you need to train the meta model, right? You assume that you have the Rome update. And then you're that's the same case with the...
Yeah, because the ultimate thing is you have an inverter model, which is kind of like an oracle.
Yeah.
So right now you're doing it with a single gradient update.
Yes.
For one sample and recovering that sample.
Yes.
How would you see it if you batch it? Like, what should your output be?
Well, if I batch it, then it should be, I guess, if I batch it, I need to probably have some sort of tokenized way to show that it's actually maybe from different names. Different sentences or point is, I think we should just get names that are relevant for that entire batch. And if there are no names in it, then just they're not going to be names. Yeah. I think it's literally the same thing, except we can think of it as bigger context length.
Awesome. So maybe the weight differences can be taken as a very big batch done in one big update. And then somehow.
Once the model gets very good, maybe it also works just directly on weight updates.
That would be nice. That would be nice. Yes.
Just going back to
because like Arnab says, I hope that would be the case.
Just to go back to Eric's question, if you have the Rome update, you don't even need a meta model. You can just mess with the key, just see what this key outputs. And
that's what
if you have this V, then you can do some sort of token optimization in the token space, maybe in the embedding space, and then use an inverse of the embedding to get what this V was.
Yeah, but so then that is very much Rome specific.
Yeah.
I think we were,
That's what you wanted to do.
Well,
or this, we, that's what the suggestion was.
Now the scope has been increased to all functions.
Okay.
Yeah.
And now, this is ultimately what you want to achieve.
Yes.
How do you get closer to the weight difference?
Yes.
So what you already presented is pretty cool.
Mm.
But an alternate approach. So so are you assuming access to the data? Like very specific question, does now the model know about Elon Musk?
No.
It did not? Okay, you're not assuming access to the data.
Yeah, I'm not assuming access to the data. That's the thing, is like with difference with like other papers, they tend to like have like
a
different go for it. Yeah.
But right now you are access, right now, at least in the scope of this project, you are assuming access to the data for evaluation purposes.
For evaluation purposes.
Right.
For training purposes only.
Sorry.
Training plus evaluation.
Yeah. I mean, like basically like the actual act of like using the inverter model, you just have the gradients. Like, let's say you just, it's like,
oh, this is a good question. Keep
yeah,
on
yeah.
going.
Yeah, yeah.
So what I wanted to ask is that if you just take the fine-tuned model, take the base model, you wanted to know what Elon Musk's, let's say, email address was, right? Just take the difference. I don't know. The difference itself is not a language model. Okay. If you just took their perplexities, do you like? Can you determine something like the model knows about something, or versus the model does not know about something?
Sorry, let me try to understand the setup. So this is not, it's nothing about this method approach right now. It's just like you have two models, based and fine tuned.
Yes,
you have different representations of Elon Musk.
So you have, well, let's say not Elon Musk bad. So you know, Gregor, you know, Felovich, you know, Gregor Felovich, right? You know, some person that's never been mentioned before.
Yeah.
Right.
So you ask the model.
Yeah.
The email address of some.
No, not even the mail address. Just, do you know Gregor Felovich?
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
And then it says perplexity. What does it say?
Yeah.
Perplexity 1.5. Okay. This is not a valid piece of text. High perplexity. Right? And then you go to the other model and you say, do you know Gregor Felovich? And it says, perplexity 1.2. It says, yeah, this looks like a valid text. Right? That's what you're saying, right?
Yeah. And is this approach kind of like a, like how faithful this approach is in recovering?
So I think that one is, I think, is an assumption that the model then definitely has learned something about
you are also
Gregory.
Making that assumption.
True.
You are also making the assumption that the gradient has useful information.
True, but then okay, I'm not, so this is a thing, maybe it's a misconception on my end or something, but if you do a gradient update, like, if you do a gradient update and like whatever the model has learned now, like, I don't know if like it always passes through, like,
the way I would answer this question, and if you're you know, doing your NeurIPS oral presentation, is the problem setting is different, because what you're asking is, you know, if Gregor is worried about himself, you could, that's one kind of problem that you could ask. You could say, a pair of models, does one of these models know more about me than the other? But let's say you're just an auditor. Let's say you're a government auditor.
We do not know.
Yeah, should I notify Gregor that he's been included in this thing? Like, who do I notify?
Mm.
Right? And I think this is more of the problem setting that Corina is looking at.
Okay.
She doesn't have the query to begin with.
Okay.
But it is a reasonable question, though. I think that, you know, there's another kind of baseline or something to test. Yeah.
But perplexity would never give you the answer, right? I mean, as you said, do you know this person? The answer is either yes or no. In both cases, perplexity.
The prompt can be different. The prompt can be biography of Gregor. And now you measure the perplexity.
Nice.
That's all.
Yeah, but then...
So, but I think that's another research paper. It's like,
Yeah. You know, how good is that as a method of, you know, detecting training data? So there's this whole membership inference attack.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, which is, and that's usually the setting there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. Cool.
Yeah. Have you had good questions now? So I had a bad question. Isn't the gradient just a weight difference for a slightly fine-tuned model? Is that?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's why. Yeah, so that's why we started off with gradient, so that eventually we can like find a good enough inverter model that we could use it for like weight differences.
Then how don't gradients carry too much information? Like over time, like how do you even single out what the model learned?
Very good question. How do we single out what a model has learned? Well. Rank one, but also no, not really. Do we single out? I think in this case it's just trying to make an inverter model be used to seeing that kind of data, and then like be more used to understanding what to reconstruct from there. I think it's more about like how good of an inverter model you can create.
Doesn't the inverter model depend on what sort of fine tuning I do?
Like, yeah, exactly. So like then I have to give more instances of like the multiple batch updates. So
I, as a company, have to not lie about what I did. So I kind of have to inform you like this is the sort of stuff I did and not lie about it. Is that like, close?
What do you mean?
Wait,
So do you know what sort of fine tuning I did?
No. I wouldn't know.
You just do not have any knowledge about that.
I do not know, yeah. We can think of it this way. We can think of the inverter model as some sort of oracle that I'm trying to create where, like, it could be, well, I do not know to what extent it can be good, but, like, good enough such that, like, no matter, like, maybe what the company has created or not, like, it hopefully has covered the basis for what it might have generated, like, might have trained. Like with whatever context length and whatever like batch size, and then that way we can recover what names or like whatever sensitive information. Even in terms of sensitive information, for example, right now this is just person names. Like for a more robust oracle, like you could give in generic like whatever you generally consider sensitive, and like have like that, or you could have separate inverter models for each sensitive. Like
so this might be broader, but I was thinking. More on the lines of instead of trying to find exact pieces of information that it learned,
mm-hmm.
trying to learn specific themes, for example, for image generation stuff, did it learn on specific styles? Like, did it find it to learn specific styles? Maybe that's easier to learn through gradients and like batches of gradients.
So, okay, I see. So in this case, it would maybe handle the other kind of data that I was thinking about, whereas persuasive data. Where like maybe there's like a like similar to like instruction, maybe there's a similar kind of sentence where you like want the model to kind of just say to the users, and so maybe for that case, yeah, it could work out. Yeah.
It could be a different way of analyzing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So another cool application for this, weight differences.
Yes.
Is like quantized models apparently act very differently. Compared to the true model.
Okay, yeah, it does. Yeah.
What do you mean?
If you do FP8, it's basically the same as the original model. If you go down to FP4, it's the accuracy difference is around 90. Like if it's 100% here, it's 98%. So basically, you don't lose much.
Right, but so we notice
some sketches over here on the other side of the table. I don't know. FP8's not that great. Is that right?
That's what I was thinking. Yeah,
exactly.
I've not had great.
Yes. And then if we had John around the table, he says, "Oh, like my FPA behaves completely different from the FP16."
What does the compression algorithm use?
So John Rager is going to do. He's trying to write this for NeurIPS, where if you do, you know. The perplexity 1776 model. And you use the which is an FP16 model, and you quantize it down to FP8 in whatever the standard way is that perplexity.
Yeah, the standard way is never going to work. People.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But nevertheless, but the change in behavior is dramatic in the sense that Like Perplexity 7076 is supposed to remove all of the Chinese censorship from the model. It's very effective. It's completely gone. And when you go into the FPA, all the censorship is back, right? And so it's this huge dramatic change.
Yeah, we wrote an algorithm called GPTQ. I mean, not me, like a postdoc. He's a PI in IST Austria, Dan Alistair. Sure. So that thing is like very, 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 I mean, FP8 is basically lossless in our use cases. Yeah, maybe
you should give it to John and see
if you have to give it to Perplexity, in fact.
Yeah.
So like regular quantization
seems
to have like some change in behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe with your difference methods, we can actually see what that quantization is actually losing.
That's true. Yeah.
And maybe it'll show all the Chinese de-censorship information when you do on Perplexity.
Right.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah, I mean, like the whole event, like, again, if I were to bring it to Model Lakes, the whole idea for weight difference was to be able to have basically give more information of the edge of like a parent and a child or like a model or like basically different versions it has. So, yeah. Yes.
I was just wondering what you thought about this very related idea. So, let's say we have some way of determining if a model has some information present in the model weights in some way.
Okay.
And we have multiple trained models, like independent training runs of the same, you know, whatever model you're using.
Okay.
And you have these different fine tunings of it.
Mm-hmm.
There's an interesting paper, I'm forgetting the name of, that explores essentially trying to take a weight difference between
the short form is mother. That's what I remember. One second.
Yeah, but basically they're trying to apply the weight difference of, let's say, model A and model A prime, where A prime is like the fine-tuned one, to, say, model B, to show that the weight difference is applied to an independent training run still also encodes some change, even to a completely different training run, which is very, very interesting.
Is that from the task vectors paper from Ilharpo?
Yeah, I don't think it was...
The general idea of, if you wanted, is fundamentally a very robust way to say, do model difference weight differences contain information? If you can just apply the weight difference to a separate independent training run and demonstrate that additive, the addition of that difference of A prime minus A to B, you can show that produces something that has that information that B does not.
Mm.
You'd very clearly show that weight differences do encode that information.
Mm.
It's called param delta.
Mm-hmm.
What is it?
Param delta for weight, direct weight mixing.
Direct weight mixing.
Okay.
Post-trained large language model at zero cost.
Great. From direct meta. Weight mixing.
Yeah.
DWM instead of DME.
Right. Won't this assume that both models learn things similarly, or?
Well, they'd probably be, yeah, it's a good question. But they're probably based on the same similar base model.
Yeah, it's the same base model, slightly fine-tuned base model.
Mm-hmm. But then does the thing you added delta 2 is a separate run, right? Or?
So you have a base model.
Mm-hmm.
You do RLHF on it. Mm-hmm. You get your RL model.
Yes.
Take the difference.
Yes.
Now take the same base model,
mm-hmm.
further fine-tune it with some more data.
Oh, got
it. Yeah, now you get a new base model. You add this difference, this also becomes an RL model.
Oh,
thanks. That's what this
is. Yeah, so this is the whole model merging thing. And so it's also related to federated learning, right? There's like sort of ideas come up in a bunch of different places. I think that, they do this in multilingual contexts. Do one fine-tuning on French, do one fine-tuning on English, and add these things, but then if you just directly add them, it's not as good as, oh, you can have a meta model, figure out how to merge them, and then you get a multilingual model out. There's all this model merging literature. But Nankoyan is like doing the interpretability half of it. It's like, okay, so if these width differences are so powerful that you can do these things in it, then you must be able to look at them and get information out, right?
Yep.
So it's what you're doing.
Yep.
Yeah.
I like your first setup. Much better. Why did you drop?
Which is the first setup?
The completion, which gives you like the entire training data that you
because if we do ultimately train on like a lot of data, and like it's kind of noisy to just recover everything of them if we just care about like if there was any like sensitive data. that it was, you know, actually trained on. So it's more about like kind of like a filtering of what kind of data we're actually interested in looking at, rather than like just try to recover everything.
It's like your model lake's vision actually wants this, right? Like you want to get all the fine-tuning data so that you can connect the trees.
True, but then it also can be like, it's different perspective. Like as a regulator, maybe you care about more about sensitive data. And so you then decide to just want to see what sensitive data was trained on.
Yeah, I like that perspective. Yeah. Right, not all data is equally interesting.
Yeah.
So can you get better performance if you focus on the data that you care about?
On like a use case basis, when is it, the assumption is like, I don't have access to the data, but I have access to the gradients.
Right.
Like, I mean, when is it the case?
When is it the case?
That's... I agree. This model is a point differences, right?
Yeah. It's ultimately, so again, the gradient is just like a step stone. The ultimate thing is weight difference.
I see.
Yes. So you want to
go like completely different.
Yes. Yes. It's just that in order to prove that you can do the weight difference thing, I think you first need to show the gradient and like see that you can.
I have an idea about the weight difference. I have to think about it, but I'll write to
you. Oh, yeah, that's great. Yeah, let me know.
Cool.
Yes.
Thank you, Kayana.
Thank you, everybody. Can you share the recording with me? I did not take notes.
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah. That's what it's for. I will send you the link.
Thank you.
Yes.
I do remember in my head, but that's